Our corals are in trouble, as are many of the creatures living in the waters along the coast. What can we do to change that? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Climate change encompasses a big idea, but we need to go deeper than that. We, the residents of South Florida, must think about the little things that we do daily that have an impact on the ecosystems around us. Today on Sundial, we hope to tackle some of those ideas. We're live at the Southernmost Bureau at the studios of Key West in front of a live audience. We're joined by a panel of advocates, experts, and lawmakers to discuss the challenges that face ocean life and the importance of it to our economy and our well-being. Coming up, we dive into a conversation that we hope will give us some answers.
The strategies we're proposing aren't going to fix those global issues, but what they're going to do is help this system be stronger.
All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Well, hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. We're here at the studios of Key West with a live audience. It is absolutely great to be here. By the way, we're also on Facebook Live, so for those of you joining us on Facebook Live, welcome as well. Well, one of the reasons that we chose to be live here in South Florida, to live here in South Florida, I should say, is, and we all know it, it's because we live near the ocean. We depend on the marine life for more than just our recreation, though, especially for the folks who live in the Keys. From commercial fishing to scuba diving, cruises, the ocean generates billions of dollars for South Florida and employs thousands in Monroe County alone. But the ecological challenges that are facing the ocean life here are serious. There's bleaching, there's a new disease that's also impacting our coral reef. Warming oceans are disrupting habitats, especially for sea turtles. And everything that happens in the Everglades is felt here. So what can we do about it? What are we doing? Are we doing enough? And can we do more? Yes, of course. We have an excellent panel of distinguished guests. I'm going to go from left to right, introduce everybody. First, starting with us here is WLRN Monroe County reporter Nan Klingener. She recently reported on the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary Plan that deals with almost 4,000 square miles of reefs and seagrass beds and hard bottom. Joining us is, next to her, is Jerry Lorenz. He's the science director for Audubon Florida, based at Audubon's Everglades Science Center in Tavernier. Heather Carruthers is on the board of Monroe County Commissioners, representing District 3. She makes regular trips to Tallahassee and D.C., advocating for more funding for environmental issues. And finally, over here, our last two guests, Richie Moretti, founder of the Marathon Turtle Hospital, Richie Moretti, you are the director for the hospital, right? Thank you, got that. And also joining us is Betty Zirkelbach, who is also with the Marathon Turtle Hospital. By the way, maybe you saw earlier today, they released a sea turtle into the ocean. It was absolutely beautiful to watch. We had that Facebook Live as well, and it was really a lot of fun. Just to mention, too, by the way, because we have audience members, we are collecting your questions and comments we're going to get to throughout the program. And if you're watching on Facebook Live, you can text us your message. Find us on Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We'd love to hear your comments or questions, and we'll share them with our panel. I want to start one question for all of you on the panel. Richie, let me start with you. All of you have lived in the Keys or been in the Keys for a long time. And I want you to tell me about one thing that you've seen that's changed dramatically since you first got here. Richie, I'll start with you.
It was really impressive when I started coming to the Keys about 40 years ago. People really like the Keys. And over the last 10-20 years, we have become an investment rather than home. And that's a little sad because people used to live here, and now so many houses became vacation rentals, so we're having to meet new people all the time, and hopefully some of them will stay and fall in love with the Keys as much as we do.
Jerry, what about you? I mean, you've been studying Florida Bay since the late 80s. Tell me about what you've seen that's changed that bothers you.
Well, the most surprising thing that I've been working in the mangroves that separate the Everglades from Florida Bay. And what I've seen there is just an extreme change in water level, and the water level is so important there. So over the course of the 30 years I've been working there, the water level has gone up 4 to 6 inches. It's very important that wetland dry out for part of the year, and When I started in 1989 was a drought year, there were 270 days that that wetland went dry. Last year, there were six. It has changed everything about that wetland, and all of the organisms that I study have left and new ones have come in. The entire ecosystem is different than when I started.
Nan, you've been reporting in this area for a while. What's the common thread that you hear from people?
Well, it's a funny thing. People in the Keys don't always agree on everything, but one common thing is whether they've been here for five generations or 5 years, they'll tell you it was better when they first got here, for sure. And some of that's just plain old nostalgia like we all have for our youth. But it's also true that things have changed a lot. It's a lot busier, especially during season. And I think, and we don't have an off season anymore really in the summer. I think what we have in the winter is a snowbird season. You know, we just have so many more winter residents who are here, and that's the added stress on our traffic and everything else. So I agree with Richie too, that the idea that we're an investment rather a home, and that's not just true for homes, houses, that's also true for businesses. A lot of our hotels that used to be owned by people who lived here and ran those hotels are now owned by corporations from elsewhere that don't have a whole lot of reason to invest in the community.
Commissioner Carruthers, what about you? Tell me one thing that's changed dramatically.
Does it have to be different than what I've just heard?
Sure.
Because I agree with both of those. You know, one thing that I noticed, especially as it relates to the marine, is that there seem to be a lot more businesses that are marine related. I mean, you know, there are at least three companies now that take out people on pontoons that have slides on them. So there's a tremendous amount of impact to our marine environment that just simply didn't exist. We didn't have all of these different kinds of charter companies and tour companies, and I think that that has really placed a lot of stress on the marine environment.
And Betty, your thoughts. Tell me one thing.
Coral reefs. I came down to get certified to dive in the early 90s, and the vis was easily 80 to 100 feet, and the coral, the color of the coral, and just gorgeous pillar patches. And unfortunately, as we all know, and you've already spoken about, the bleaching and the disease in the coral and the coral reefs have changed dramatically.
You know what, Commissioner Carruthers, something that you said, and I'm wondering, is the increased traffic of people and boats and cruises, I mean, it's good for business, right? But it's...
Some businesses, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, but you know what, that's part of what people depend on, right? So
yeah.
Is there a happy medium, or is just a reality that more people may mean more money, but it also means more problems?
Absolutely, it means more problems. It does mean more money as well, but I think that we have to start to move towards a managed tourism market where we understand the quality of the tourists that we're getting here.
What does that mean? How do you define
that? That means like we need to regulate it a little bit better. You know, we're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place thanks to our state legislature that has prohibited us from actually regulating things like illegal vacation rentals. And what we're seeing is a lot more people in places, frankly, where we used to have full-time residents. In my neighborhood, there are at least three houses on my block that used to be full-time residents that now they're vacation rentals. And that puts a tremendous amount of burden because you keep seeing a lot of people who aren't familiar with the community and they're not familiar with how to treat the marine ecosystem. So I think we need to do a much better job of education, and we need to actually look at what the sanctuary is doing in terms of managing the sanctuary and really start to see how can we affect some change so that we protect both of our ecosystem, our economy, and our quality of life.
Jerry, go ahead.
Well, one of the things that to follow up on the commissioner is I hire people to come and work here, and the cost of living because of the things she mentioned has gone up, and it is I've had people accept a job working for me doing marine ecology, and they'll call me up 3 weeks later and said, I can't live there, just flat out. And the rental property is basically gone because people can make so much more money renting their property to weekend people.
So it sounds like this comes back to what the commissioner said, is you have to create regulations. Is it to keep people out, or is it more to control the cost of living here?
It's a combination of both. You know, people should not, I think that we had a very unique situation before, frankly, the Airbnbs and started allowing people to rent out houses. And that situation was that we had a limited number of transient rentals. We controlled, there were 6,600 hotel rooms in the city of Key West, and we were able to at least manage the people who came there. But once people started looking at this as, you know, as Richie said, as an investment, they say, well, I can cover my nut if I rent this out, you know, for Fantasy Fest and Christmas and New Year's. So they have a completely different headset about the economy and about the community. They're not necessarily part of the community. They're looking at it as an investment. And our inability to regulate that, thanks to the state legislature, just exacerbates the problem that we have then with affordable housing and rental housing.
What do you go up to Tallahassee regularly.
Yeah.
What do they tell you?
That's very nice, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's part of our, been part of our legislative package for the last several years, and it will continue to be. But until we have a significant change in the legislature, I don't see that they're going to allow local governments to control their own destinies. It's, you know, it's something we constantly fight about. It's called home rule, and you know, people at a local level know what's best for their local economies and their communities.
And this is something that we'll talk about throughout the program. I wanted to come back over because, as we had mentioned before, earlier this morning, there was a turtle release just down the street. It was really a lovely event, a fun event. Betty, I want to come back to you. Just real quickly, the turtle that you released today, Harry. What was the challenge that Harry was facing that he needed basically you to help him?
Yeah, Harry came in February 1st, 6 miles off of Harry Harris Park in Tavernier, the upper Florida Keys, and was entangled in a ghost net, which is abandoned fishing gear. That net probably weighed close to 60 pounds, if you can imagine, and Harry was almost half the size as he was today when he came in, emaciated, probably had not eaten in months. Near death, one that we didn't think was going to make it. So we treated him with IV nutrition to get him to eat. And as you saw today, he was fat and happy and was returned to sea. So he came in, you know, basically from fishing gear.
By the way, how long have you been with the Turtle Hospital? What brought you here?
Going on 8 years, I came down to work for nonprofit almost 20 years ago to work at the Dolphin Research Center with Manatee Rescue and was director of facilities there.
I mean, we have reported on the show that some turtle nesting is getting better, but some of the challenges is the fact that, you know, water temperatures, climate change are impacting the kind turtles' breeding habits, but also the fact that it can impact turtles' gender before they're born. So more females are born than males.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to bring up. It's kind of a sore subject. They have downlisted the green sea turtles that were listed as endangered. They're now listed as threatened. As we know in the Florida Keys, we see over 50% of our population is inflicted with that fibropapillomatosis, which is that horrific disease with the tumors. And it's been an incredible year for nesting all throughout the state of Florida. And everybody's excited and look at populations are increasing. But if you look at that hatchling success ratio, how many of those eggs actually are viable hatchlings returning to sea, and the gender of those turtles, the gender is determined by the temperature of the sand. So as our climate warms, we have had only females. The researchers, like Dr. Jeanette Weineken, who's in the film, they have only seen females for the past 3 years in the state of Florida. So it's frightening. So yes, we have a lot of nests, but I think 2 years ago, the hatchling success ratio was about 38% compared to 5 years ago when it was about 81%. So if you do the math, we do have a lot of nests, and that's a wonderful thing, but we really need to take care of more than that.
You talked about the film, and the film you're talking about is the new documentary from WLRN-TV, Troubled Waters, The Turtle's Tale. We played it last night. It'll be on television in early October. But here's actor and Oceana board member Ted Danson, who's in the documentary.
Turtles have been around millions of years. And they are now, most of them, either on an endangered species list or they're actually gone. So they're kind of like the canary in the mine. Some turtles are predators and they eat jellyfish. If you remove the turtle from the ecosystem, from the ocean, all of a sudden you're going to not be able to go swimming like you like to do, because you'll be swamped by jellyfish. So you can't just extract randomly or let, you know, whole species die off without thinking it'll have an impact on the entire environment.
Richie, how important are sea turtles?
Well, they survived about 200 million years, and they've adapted to a lot of things. It's like when a condo gets built. It's, you know, you say, oh, I'm so sorry there's a condo there. But, you know, the turtles have been really, they will find another spot. They might move up the beach a couple of hundred yards. But sometimes those condos that we complain about, actually the shadow from those condos make it possible for the turtles to get into the water. Most cities have so much ambient light that sometimes the condos will block out the ambient light and let the turtles get in the water. So it's kind of a balancing act.
All right, again, I want to remind everybody that we are live from the studios of Key West. Today, Sundial, again, talking about some of the challenges that our marine life is facing. And again, I want to reintroduce our folks here on the panel, again, from left to right. Joining us, WLRN reporter Nan Klinginer, Audubon Florida's Jerry Lawrence, Monroe County Commissioner Heather Carruthers, Betty Zirkelback, and Richie Moretti from the Marathon Turtle Hospital. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live, or if you're just following us online, we'd love to hear from you. You can post a comment or question. Share with us your thoughts on some of the things you've seen change over the many years you've lived in South Florida, especially if you live in the Keys. What are some of the big changes you've seen that really bother you? Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And we're going to get to some audience questions here in a little bit. Again, if you have any questions, we can pass around the card and you can post those questions and we'll get you up to the mic. Jerry, coming back, I wanted to go back to the 1990s. You started to see seagrass die off. When did you start noticing it? Was it really evident right away?
Well, it wasn't evident right away, even though my colleagues had all been working on this problem for several years at that point. The seagrass started to die off in 1987. But when I showed up in 1989, there were places in Florida Bay that were just, they are what they were historically, just this emerald green water, vast seagrass beds, just gorgeous. And I would stop at a certain place that I'd just love to for lunch when I was going across the bay, because it's just so beautiful. Within 6 months, it was dead. And, you know, that was followed by algal blooms and fish kills and mangrove die-off. And I just watched the bay collapse over the course of 3 or 4 years.
Did people understand what was going on as you were watching that happen?
No, not really. Us scientists, we just started scrambling to try and figure out, you know, this had never happened before. And people have been living in the Keys, you know. Nobody ever discussed this situation. And the historical record, if you look at like soil cores, it just didn't really happen like that on such a massive scale. And so we were scrambling, and you know what it comes down to, at least with Florida Bay, is as we learned more and more things, is this freshwater flow that comes out of the Everglades was basically cut off in the early 80s, and that resulted in very high salt content in Florida Bay, far more than ocean water, and that stresses these seagrasses. Seagrasses die, they decay, it creates an algal bloom, and now you have a feedback loop. The algae covers the seagrass, more seagrass dies off, and of course the algae takes in all the oxygen at night, and that kills the fish, and you're just in this endless loop. And we found that when we finally started getting, because we were in a drought at that time, getting rainfall and returning freshwater flow to Florida Bay, the bay started recovering. It took 25 years to recover, and then after that 25 years, we declared victory, and a year later, it all died again. So it's been tough to watch this happen twice.
Commissioner, I wanted to ask you about, you talk about the algal blooms. It's not just that. You also have the sargassum. I mean, it seems like just one thing after another is making it very difficult for people to make their living.
Well, yeah, sargassum has been a real problem this summer, and from everything that we're reading, it seems like it's going to be an increasingly difficult thing to deal with going forward. You know, I had a meeting earlier this week regarding this. We are seeing, I think, something like, you know, 14,000 square miles of sargassum floating out there, and it's the largest field of sargassum that we've ever actually experienced. It's being fed by runoff from the Mississippi Delta as well as from the Amazon, and it's creating nutrient conditions that are great for sargassum and, frankly, good for turtles when they're juveniles out at sea. But when it starts to come ashore, it again has impacts on the dissolved oxygen and can really damage our sea life. Not to mention that it's, you know, pretty noxious to smell as it's deteriorating, and a nuisance. And I mean, I just heard that in Mexico, the Yucatan Peninsula, there are beaches where there's 6 and 8 feet deep of sargassum. There are marinas that have been completely closed because they can't get to them. So we're going to have to find a way to deal with this that still preserves the viability of the sargassum as we need it out in the ocean, but keeps it away from our shores.
All right. Let me go to, we have an audience member who wants to ask us a question. Please step up to the mic. Introduce yourself. Just give us your first name.
Hello, my name is Randy. I live here in Key West. I work for the Monroe County Property Appraiser, and I'm a professional scuba diver instructor.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Ask us your question.
My question is, what's being done to stem the flow of toxic wastewater coming out of South Florida from cesspits, Big Sugar, et cetera, et cetera?
Who wants to tackle that?
a lot. Unfortunately, we haven't had a whole lot of success yet. Certainly, you know, Nan and I were talking before the show, and the answer to, you know, who's responsible or what's responsible is us and everything. It's the agriculture, the cattle industry, the row crops. Yeah, you can point at them and say that's bad, but so are septic tanks and so are lawns, and there are so many things that are affecting this environment. And we are working to curtail that. But the bottom line is we all have to cooperate. We all have to work on towards the same thing. It's become evident that the most important thing to many Floridians, if not the most Floridians, is the comfort in our environment. And if the last couple of years haven't shown us all that if we don't, especially the Everglades, if we don't start treating that property right, our marine environment isn't going to be so much fun anymore.
All right, real quickly, I want to get Nan in. We're going to go to break.
What Jerry and I were talking about is if you ask people what's killing the reef, and is it the South Florida watershed? Is it global warming? Is it overfishing? Is it, you know, water quality? The answer is yes. You know, it's all of those things. And journalists, especially in the public, we tend to want an answer, right? Like, what is killing the reef so we can go bother that thing? But
there's
it's
no
a lot
answer.
Of things. It's really complicated.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation about marine life in South Florida. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to look at some of those challenges and what we're doing in conservation efforts. That's coming up next here on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. We are live from the studios of Key West. We're having a great conversation talking about some of the challenges that we face here in South Florida, Key West, and the Keys specifically. But again, it's an ecosystem we all share, and everything that happens here or there impacts everybody else. I wanted to come back to the panel again. We're Facebook Live right now. If you have a comment or question, you could post it there. We'll read those. You can tweet us at WLRN Sundial. But I wanted to come back to the panel because we're talking. I want to jump into ideas about conservation efforts and what we need to do. But Commissioner Carruthers, you wanted to respond to something you heard right before the break.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think we are making some progress. You know, here in the Keys, we have completely sewered our Keys. We've spent nearly $1 billion for 77,000 residents to sewer the Keys. And I think that I think we are all to be commended for that. It's taken us 20 years. We have a very rural community outside of here. And we finally got that done. And that has demonstrably improved our nearshore water quality. But all of our colleagues up and down the coasts of Florida have not yet done that, and that's something that needs to be done. I'm also, frankly, been encouraged by this current governor's commitment to the Central Everglades Restoration Project and Central Everglades Protection Project. These plans are intended to improve that water flow through the Everglades and bring it back down here. We're also now looking at creating a large reservoir to collect water off of Okeechobee and clean it before it gets into the Everglades. And so I think we're starting to make some progress, but just as you said, everybody in the state has to foot this bill. And unlike FDOT, there's no significant long-term funding strategy for water projects. FDOT gets 10 times as much money every year as all the water projects in the state.
And
that's something we need to correct.
And we definitely will ask about what the new governor has been doing or what we expect from him. But Nan, real quickly, the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary released its restoration blueprint. What are some of the challenges they want to address?
Well, the state of the coral is the most obvious one because of what we've been talking about, and most recently this terrible disease that's been affecting coral. But also, the plan is pretty ambitious in taking in more of the different kinds of habitats than the original management plan for special protection. Some of the seagrass areas, some of the shoreline areas, some of the deeper reefs and patch reefs that have actually been healthier than the kind of main fore reef that everybody knows from diving and snorkeling. Talking about what we were talking about earlier too, this plan actually proposes limiting use on three different reef areas, one each in the upper, middle, and lower Keys. And that's new, and that would be a really different way to approach this, and that's what we're talking about, managing the impacts on the resources. So it'll be interesting to see if that actually comes to pass.
Jerry, you're on the Sanctuary Council. Is this plan, this proposal, ambitious enough?
I think it is, yes. I was amazed at how comprehensive the sanctuary staff and superintendent approached having to get this done, and it took a long time. It took almost 10 years, and those of us on the council were getting very frustrated. But the thought process, the science, the justification for this plan was so well thought out. Now, there are parts of it that I think could be better, and there's the opportunity to have that through public comment, but it is just tremendously well thought out, and I'm very proud of the sanctuary.
You know, Commissioner Carruthers, coming back to something you said near the beginning of the program, and again, so many people in South Florida make their living on the water, near the water. But again, it's finding that balance so that people can run their successful businesses and make their living, and they have the right to live here. But again, you know, more human interaction means more challenges.
Yeah, it can. You know, the city of Key West is trying to address this. I mean, we just passed a ban on some sunscreen, and we're glad that the state seems to have let us get away with that so far. although, you know, even there's conflicting science on which products are actually best for the coral reefs. I think that most people who live in the Keys, to something you said earlier, are very aware of how important our environment is to us, and we're very protective of it, and we're extremely engaged. We have a very engaged population down here. Our problem is communicating that kind of respect that we have to people who are not here full time, and people who are just here for a weekend and a week, and ensuring that they protect the environment the way we do.
All right, so if you were in charge of that, how would you do it? How do you educate tourists?
Well,
that's what we're doing. We're asking tourists. We need you to act a certain way.
Well, certainly all the charter captains and people who take people out on boats need to be educated, and they need to make sure that before everybody gets in the water, they know this too. I think that if somebody had really deep pockets, it would be really nice if they gave all of these charter boats reef-safe sunscreen. And so, you know, and if people have the access to this, they're going to use it.
Jerry.
Well, one of the things is Everglades National Park has implemented a mandatory boater education.
Yep.
If you want to go out in the marine waters of Everglades National Park. And I really think that's the kind of education that has to be implemented. You shouldn't be able to just come to this fragile environment, pay your $50, and go wherever you want in a boat, especially with all the banks and such that we have here. It just astounds me that we don't have better education before you can do things like that. And so Everglades National Park, making it mandatory is a first step. I would like to see the sanctuary. They have one that you can volunteer to take right now, and it's a good course. I'd like to see it become mandatory.
Betty and Richie, I want to hear your thoughts on this. Betty, what do you think about, people who live here? I've lived here for so many years, and I've heard a lot of stories, and I think I've been well educated on sea turtles and their nesting and stay away from them, and respect that, and of course the light and everything else. But do you think that's an issue where we need more education and tourist a problem? Not to hate on tourists, I'm
no,
just saying.
No, we don't hate on tourists. We love tourists, and at the Turtle Hospital we do a lot to try to educate tourists, not just the people that are here visiting us, but we go live with Facebook and, as many opportunities and as many platforms as I can get on just to encourage people to care. I want to speak to, the increase in tourists and from a sea turtles perspective as what we see. Just this year, from the start of lobster mini season and the beginning of lobster season, in that 3-week period, there were over 24 DOAs, which means dead on arrival, sea turtles that were struck by boats and killed. And that is a huge increase to what we see normally. Boats are going much faster. I don't think there's anyone out there intentionally running down sea turtles, but I just try to educate the public, encourage them to wear polarized glasses, slow down, you're in the Florida Keys, it's beautiful, put a spotter on the boat. I think education can go a long way in helping people to enjoy, but if that's how many dead sea turtles that we heard about, just think of how many, not just sea turtles, but that effect of that boat traffic.
That sounds a lot like the issue we always had with manatees and slowing down for manatees. So is it, that almost sounds like we need maybe speed limits and regulations.
Well, nobody wants to be regulated. I understand that. But I've talked to some of the captains that really do care about sea turtles. I mean, people call us in tears and, oh, my God, I just, hit and killed a sea turtle, and they're in tears. And I think our boats are going a lot faster. And I've heard from captains on the water that even birds that used to be able to get out of the way, now the boats are going so fast, the birds can't get out of the way. So I think that might be part of the challenge. I don't think we're going to slow down the boats. But it's just, I just wanted to give an idea. I mean, that's real life, what has happened this season from a sea turtle perspective.
And I always wonder why people need 3 and 4 motors on their boat when I see those boats. Like, what are you really doing with that
Richie
boat?
Can speak to that. It's fun for them. Well,
Richie, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
I would like to have a 4th engine on my boat. But I always keep a young man with good eyes on the bow watching all the time. But it's nice when I have to take a turtle halfway to Cuba. Mm-hmm. It's nice to be there in 45 minutes. And when somebody calls and there's a turtle tangled up in some weed line, yeah, that I can get out there in a hurry and get it untangled. Let me step back a bit while we're talking about sargassum weed. There's a lot of confusion about this right now. The first time you all heard about sargasso was in Columbus's journal. He was becalmed in a sea of weed. He was in the Sargasso Sea. Mm-hmm. This seagrass has been around a long time, and it's pretty odd. You find out a lot about it. You know, if you want more of it, you run across it because it propagates by fragmentation. We've been having a real hard time the last 20, 25 years. When I started fishing off the Keys was about 40 years ago, and we would go out with a garbage can to catch dolphin, and you'd find weed lines that were 20 feet across. Well, it's gotten scarcer and scarcer over the last 20 years. I have to run around out there. I'll have a bunch of baby turtles. And I look for weed lines that don't have any fish on them, so I can sprinkle the turtles. Makes me feel like Johnny Appleseed, sprinkling the. But first I troll it and make sure there's no fish in it. But over the years, it's gotten scarcer and scarcer and scarcer on sargasso weed. This year, there's a change in current, and that's why we're seeing it. It's not that all of a sudden there's more sargasso. It's just been another bend in the current that all of a sudden we have some coming up the coast. But it's so important because that's the hatchery for all of the lobsters, all of the turtles. It's really necessary. In fact, the fishing industry joined Tina Brown and I, and we sued the Secretary of Commerce. And they finally came out with a rule against sargassum. They can't harvest it unless it's north of the North Carolina-South Carolina border. They have to be 100 miles offshore, and it has to be after December. Because when they harvested it, it would take all the baby turtles, and if it didn't kill them, it put them back with no habitat. So this is odd, this sargasso. It's not because all of a sudden they're breeding and there's more. It's simply we got some currents that's bringing it in.
Real quickly, I wanted to go to our audience. We have another audience question. Go ahead and step up to the mic. Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Daniela. I'm visiting from New York City.
And by the way, I do not want to make it sound like we hate on visitors. My apologies. But, you know, it's if you live in a place, you know it. So we want to educate people who are visiting. But welcome.
All right. I have two questions, if I may. But the first question is, what effect do you think the findings at the Tampa Aquarium will have on South Florida's reefs? And I'm referring to the recent finding that cultivated pillar coral can spawn under cultivated conditions.
Okay, somebody want to tackle that right now? Go ahead, Nan.
Yeah, I can see Karen Neely, who works on propagating pillar coral back there, laughing. Yeah, that is amazing news that they have actually had spawning in a lab. You know, it's brand new. We don't know exactly what it means yet and whether, you know, what it'll mean for different species, but it is huge hope, especially right now with this stony coral tissue loss disease. You know, they've created a gene bank for corals because this disease is so bad. And now we will have the genetic material. And if we can breed it in the lab, then hopefully one day we can, you know, repropagate the reef.
And if you could, you had a second question real quickly. Go ahead.
The second question is simply, if there was one recommendation to city dwellers like myself, what we can do, what would that be?
Somebody give her a little educate. Go ahead. Anybody?
From my perspective, and this is just my perspective, support for Everglades restoration is what I think is one of the most important things to the marine environment in the Keys. I don't think we can get back to the kind of ecosystem that we all came here and saw without Everglades restoration. That's not to say there aren't other things, but you're asking what you can do to support. Supporting Everglades restoration is in my opinion, the most important thing to the marine environment.
All right, Betty, go ahead real quickly.
I just, a little closer to home, I think anybody anywhere can make a difference with what you put on your lawn, you know, what you throw away or use. I mean, everyone, you know, we can support these big projects and we need to support these big projects, but I think a real change is gonna happen when people are looking at what they're doing every day. So you can look at what you're doing every day because everything finds its way to the ocean.
And
I stand corrected.
There you go. All right, we're going to take one more quick break, come back, and take more questions and continue our conversation with this panel. We are again live from the studios of Key West. Sundial, we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. We are live at the studios of Key West. And again, just we have a great panel of folks joining us here. Again, WLRN reporter Nan Klinginer, Audubon Florida's Jerry Lawrence, Monroe County Commissioner Heather Carruthers, and Betty Zirkelbach and Richie Moretti from the Marathon Turtle Hospital. We are going to get through these because, again, watching the clock, we're tight on time. And I wanted to ask all of you, and Commissioner Carruthers, I'll start with you because you brought it up earlier, the question of what Tallahassee is doing. And we'll skip D.C. for now, but what they're doing in Tallahassee, a new governor comes in and has put a lot of money towards Everglades restoration. Just tell me real quickly what you think of what this legislature's doing, but this governor specifically. Are you happy with the decision so far?
I've been pleasantly surprised by this governor and his commitment to environmental restoration and to the Everglades projects. But I do think that this entire state of Florida is about water. We're surrounded by water. We have springs. We do not look at water as the infrastructure facility that it is. We all live by it, and we need to really start to make significant investment in our water capacity, in our water quality, in if we're going to continue to live here. And this goes both for the water outside of our shores and for the water that's on our lands. And we simply have been cutting away at our investment in clean water for decades. And as I said earlier, we spend 10 times as much on transportation. And where does that get us? That gets us traffic jams, as we do on water facilities. We need to have a dedicated funding source and make sure that we invest in clean water throughout the state.
We got a Facebook question coming from Sally Manns asking, how many millions of dollars are spent on tourism through the Tourist Development Council? I don't know if anybody's got that number on them.
Well, sure, I do. I think that the Tourism Development Council has a budget of about $39 million right now. And, they spend a lot of that on advertising and maintaining our tourism economy, but they also spend a good amount on capital projects as well. If I had my druthers, I would like it if they had a little more flexibility to spend money on environmental and capital projects. That's something that has to be addressed again in Tallahassee because those are state regulations that control how that money can be spent.
Jerry, I mean, I've seen the last three, four governors talk about Everglades restoration, what we need to do to protect the Everglades. But what have you seen happen, not happen? What's your biggest frustration?
My biggest frustration is how slow it goes. The last governor, not the current one, was a little bit trying when it comes to Everglades restoration.
Governor Rick Scott, I'll say, that's right.
But the current governor, as the commissioner just said, I was about knocked off my feet when he came into office and started acting. And he wasn't just talking, he started spending money, putting his money where his mouth is. And this is the most money we've had in a single year since SERP came on. I'm sorry, the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan came online in 2000. And so the federal government hasn't even stepped up. I just think that the disastrous algal blooms last year just woke everybody up. And that is, that's the basis. But this governor, as far as environmentally goes, I'm just very impressed.
You know what? I wanted to come back because the other thing the governor did too is this. There was a push in the legislature to take away home rule because numerous cities across South Florida have been putting bans on straws and plastic bags and so forth. And there was a push in the legislature to basically take that away and say this needs to be a state decision. The governor vetoed it. But Nan, I mean, Key West especially, kind of setting the tone on this because, as mentioned before, there was a ban on certain types of sunscreens, and that was only other place I know it was Hawaii.
Right, yeah. Key West is the first place in the mainland U.S. that has taken that step about sunscreens. And I will say he vetoed the ban about, or the home rule stuff about plastic straws, but it still applies to styrofoam, as the folks in Coral Gables, and plastic bags, so there's a way to go yet on that. Key West has really been a leader and just this week approved on first reading a ban on plastic straws and has approved a goal to become single-use plastics free when and if we're allowed to by the legislature. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, what's the point? It's just this one little municipality of 25,000 people. That's not going to save the reef, you know, Key West banning certain sunscreens. But it also strikes me as, like, it's what you can do. It, you know, it's setting an example. It's leading the way and showing that it can be done. And it's also, like, if you have a patient that's in intensive care because they've been beaten up, you know, maybe you shouldn't be kicking them. You know? Maybe you should stop what you can do to add to that damage.
All right, let's go back to our audience. We got an audience question. Please step up to the mic, introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, my name's Chuck, and I'm a Key West resident. We have some young people in the audience here today, and during this conversation, I'm thinking about how we live our American lifestyle. And our American lifestyle has developed to a point, or come to a point where it's a very, we consume products, and the more we consume, the more we waste, and where does it go? I heard that we even found plastic now in the Arctic Circle. So there's plastic everywhere on this planet. What can we do? We have a phenomenal opportunity here in the Florida Keys because we are a unique environment and we're a unique county separate from the mainland. What can we do today and start moving forward, this generation, our generation sitting on the panel and in the audience, to protect this world for our younger generation in terms of how we consume, how we think, and our tourism? There has to be something we can start now to start turning, stemming the tide.
I almost think that generation's a little bit further ahead of us. They're pretty good. At least I'm impressed. But anybody on the panel want to tackle that?
It's
Don't
a
be
big
shy.
Nut.
Don't be shy.
I mean, I think it's what we've been talking about in terms of issues like, you know, banning plastic bags and single-use plastics wherever we can. My kids think it's funny because I tell them that when I was a kid, we used to get our milk delivered every morning in glass bottles. It used to be in a little metal box on the front porch.
Do they laugh at you?
They're like, wow, Mom, you're kidding. I'm like, no. And, you know, we don't do that anymore. We just use it and we throw it away. And, you know, I'm glad to see Jerry's, you know, Tiva or whatever, a Yeti cup there.
Yeah.
So. You know, I think we all down here need to do more of that, and I think we try to do more of that.
Let's do this only.
It's got to be we do need to do it on a state level.
Only because of time, real quickly, I want to start at the very end over there. Richie, start with you. Are you optimistic about the future?
Oh, absolutely.
Why?
We live in paradise, and we realize it, and we'll do what it takes to keep it paradise.
Betty, why are you optimistic? I'm going to take you are.
I am.
Okay.
Optimistic.
Why?
Just the awareness today, the young people, you know, I'm so grateful. I think when I was a teenager, I mean, I don't think there was near the awareness there is today. And I think that's a first step.
Everything that's happening though, are you optimistic for sea turtles?
I am.
Yeah.
I have to be. There's hope. I mean, look at the beach today. Nearly 500 people to come see a 30-pound sea turtle go back to sea. That gives me hope. There's enough people out there that care.
Commissioner, how do you feel for the future?
Locally, I'm very optimistic because I think we have a really engaged population down here, and I know I'm very hopeful about the younger generation. I hope that they can get to the voting booth in time. That's my my goal.
Yeah, for some of them, it's just a couple of years. Yeah. Jerry, what about you?
I'm guardedly optimistic. Something that the Superintendent Fangman said at the Sanctuary Advisory Council meeting the other day is that we used to believe that the ocean was too big to harm, and now it seems like we're saying it's too big to fix, and that is not the correct attitude. We have to fix the ocean.
Nan, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, I mean, just this week, we've seen the news about the spawning in the lab at the Florida Aquarium, a plastic straw ban in Key West, and this restoration blueprint for the sanctuary, just this week. I mean, yeah.
I like that, Jerry, though. A little bit guarded, but we have to stay a little bit optimistic for the future. I want to thank my panel. I'm going to, again, start from left to right. Monroe County reporter Nan Klinger, Monroe County Commissioner Heather Carruthers, Jerry Lorenz, Science Director of Audubon, Florida, based here in Tavernier, I believe, right?
Correct.
Richie Moretti and also Betty Zirkelback from the Marathon Turtle Hospital. What a great panel. Thank you so much today for joining us.
Thank you.
And I just want to say real quickly, I mean, that's our program for this day, but a lot of people to thank. I'm going to get through real quickly. Our producers are Chris Remington and Alejandro Martinez. Our intern is Sherilyn Cabrera, WLRN's program director, who's here, by the way, Jason Zapka. Our technical supervisor back at the studio, Peter J. Merritt. Doug Peterson is the engineer who's set up all of this to make it happen. Adrian Kennedy is the executive producer of WLRN-TV. A reminder, Troubled Waters, A Turtle's Tale will be broadcast live on television October 3rd. So check for updates on that. Some of you got to watch it yesterday. If you did, tell everybody how awesome it is. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre, running our Facebook Live. Denise Frontato is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. I'm Luis Hernandez. Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Tell us what we need to know about how we can make things better. What role can we play? Whether we live here or as visitors, what can we do? Because if we make it better here, we can make it better in other places. Set the tone now. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day, guys.